This is MSO News Sports. I'm Bill Newell, and we are joined by legendary North Shore sports writer Mike Renier. Mike saying, I don't know about that. But Mike retired from the Salem News. Now, how many years ago, Mike, did you retire?
Well, it was actually 2011, but it was kind of a faux retirement. In other words, like I still get called in by sports editor Phil Stacy when they do the summer series, when we do those huge summer stories about the greatest quarterbacks of all time or the greatest football teams of all time or the greatest basketball teams of all time. And because I go back to the 1970s, they like to rely on my perspective from that era. So those are fun stories to do in the dead of summer because it gives major stories and they're well read and we get a lot of feedback. And, you know, I covered several football games this past season again, whether it be Essex Tech or Danvers a couple of times and all that. So I still keep my hand in it and I'm hoping to cover some games in the upcoming state basketball tournament because basketball is my first love. So we'll see how that goes. So I try to keep my hand in it and Phil Stacy keeps me busy that way and I certainly still stay in touch with all the guys at the Salem News as well as the guys here at the Eagle Tribune in Lawrence because I've known them for years too. And as you know, the papers are connected.
Yeah. Well, Mike, you mentioned basketball, so you're still very much at basketball, whether it be the Celtics, talk about that, or high school basketball. So I'm going to zero right in on high school basketball right now. And the probably one of the biggest games I think was on the schedule in the area in the North Shore was last Sunday, was the Central Catholic at St. John's prep game, where you have Coach Walsh coming in his first year at Central Catholic, former Danvers coach, you know, bringing his team in and going into overtime against the prep, coming out with the win. But, I mean, you followed prep basketball for so many years now.
It's just, the funny thing is, a lot of people affiliate me with prep basketball because I've been to so many of their games going back to when the late Bob McKenna was coaching in the 1970s. But even though I went to Central Catholic, St. John's Prep was a team that I covered for many years. And it was a lot of North Shore flavor, obviously, at the new St. John's Prep Athletic Complex, that $25 million building. I got to say, if people from North Shore haven't gone to that building yet to see anything at St. John's Prep, it's a $25 million sports complex with the strength and training facility, a swimming pool, which I think is hosting the Catholic Conference Championships this week. And then you have a field house with the basketball court and a track around it. Magnificent place to go see anything. And it overlooks the football stadium with the artificial turf. Great facility for fans who want to see anything sports related there. But the game I saw on Sunday, yes, Central Catholic, which had lost to St. John's Prep in a Christmas tournament here in the Merrimack Valley, had a rematch, a regular schedule game on Sunday. And, you know, St. John's Prep had them late in the game, up by 7 or 8 with 3.5 minutes left. And Central rallied and dominated the overtime. And it's a great rivalry they have, Central Catholic, especially the last 10, 15 years when Pat Connaughton, who's now in the NBA, was playing and the prep started to the rivalry started to tilt towards St. John's Prep because they won some games. And with John Walsh now coaching Central, is a lot, you know, three-time state champion at Danvers, John Walsh, great young coach. Central Catholic made a phenomenal decision when they hired him as coach because he's got that team rolling again. They play the prep. That's kind of a momentum game. Both teams will make the Division I state tournament. And it'll be interesting. They might meet again in the state tournament.
Is Coach Walsh, is he now very calm on the sidelines and you know, like in his chair the whole time?
Well, not quite in his chair, but I did notice he did seem calmer than in his Danvers days. And I think it's because he doesn't want to pick up any technical fouls. There's too many of the games are close now, Billy. At Danvers, you know, he could win games by 25, 30, 35 points. And, you know, if he wanted to blow off some steam, he could do it. At Central Catholic, you know, when you're playing Malden Catholic and you're playing St. John's Prep and you're playing Lawrence High School and Andover, that's a grinded out, gritty, physical, tough-nosed, hard-nosed basketball, that style of basketball that they play in the Merrimack Valley. And John Walsh is I think, learning a lot on the job, that he's not going to win those games by 20 or 25 points. A six-point win is a good win.
All right. Well, every question I have, I'm going to try to make a transition here, Mike, if I can. But so you mentioned Pat Connaughton. I know you've been watching a lot of Pat Connaughton on late-night television in the NBA.
Yeah.
But you were at the court, is Pat Connaughton Court at St. Yes. John's Prep, because
yes.
I think because of he must have helped out at some level.
I would think so.
At some level for that $25 million. Some of that it might be Pat Connaughton money, as he remembers his alma mater there at St. John's Prep. But again, you watched him in high school. Now you're watching him in the NBA as well. And how about just an update on what you're seeing there?
Well, I'll tell you what, Pat Connaughton and I text each other regularly. even at 2 o'clock in the morning, because I get the NBA package and I watch all of the Portland Trailblazer games. And as a matter of fact, I tweeted today that Connaughton and C.J. McCollum, who was a guard, they combined for 60 points last night. Now, C.J. McCollum had 50 of them, okay? But Pat Connaughton comes off the bench and scores 10. Now, actually, for people who followed Connaughton's career at St. John's Prep, they won a state championship in 2011 over St. John's of Shrewsbury. And the main player on that St. John's of Shrewsbury team was Richard Rodgers, who's now a tight end for Aaron Rodgers of the Green Bay Packers. So, you know, Rodgers went on to great things in college as a football player. But Pat Connaughton, you know, this year, he's on the third year of it was a non-guaranteed year of his contract. And I kind of figured if he didn't have a breakout year this year and get more playing time, he'd end up back in the Baltimore Orioles system. But he went from 4 or 5 minutes a game his first 2 years to playing 20, 25 minutes a game, and sometimes even more this season. He's like the sixth man or the seventh man. It's not inconceivable for him to get double-figure games. He's had several 10-point games, 14-point games, 18-point games. He had a 24-point game to start the season. And I think he's kind of fooled a lot of people who thought he wouldn't make it as an NBA player. They felt baseball was his number one sport, and he would develop quicker as a baseball player, as a pitcher for the Baltimore Orioles. However, the Orioles have to be pretty upset right now that he's blossoming and starting to flourish as a third-year player with the Portland Trailblazers. He fits in beautifully with that team. He's very team-oriented. He's shooting like 45, 46% from the floor. He shoots 37% from three-point land. So he's got very respectable and even good shooting average for NBA player. And he's getting more of an increasing role. And, of course, fans who are going to the Boston Garden on Super Bowl Sunday have a chance to see the Celtics play, whether it's on TV or in person. Pat Connaughton and the Portland Trailblazers come into the Boston Garden on Sunday for a noontime game. And, of course, Connaughton himself, we were texting, so he's very excited about seeing the Patriots play that night at 6:30 p.m. So he's looking forward to coming home here on Sunday, seeing his friends from Arlington who grew up here, his friends from St. John's Prep who, you know, he was around back in the 2009, 2010, 2011, and, of course, people who followed him on the North Shore. He expects a big gathering of friends and family to see him on Sunday, and then, of course, they'll all adjourn and watch the Patriots game on Sunday night.
Yeah, he won't have to fly out right away?
Well, I'm not sure what their schedule is at that point, but I know he's counting on watching the Patriots. He is a big Patriots fan, and it's just fun to see him blossom into the kind of player that, you know, he's defied a lot of the odds and a lot of the doubters who thought he wouldn't make it in basketball. I mean, he was a terrific player at Notre Dame. I remember when he was a senior at St. John's Prep and really one of the top players in the state. You know, I had plenty of naysayers who said he wasn't going to play much at Notre Dame, but he was a four-year player there. He played more games than any player in Notre Dame history, the number of games he suited up and started. So that says something about it. And then he got drafted in the second round, and people said he wouldn't make it as an NBA player. He didn't play with the Orioles. Well, he's just proved a lot of people wrong, and he's got a phenomenal team-oriented attitude. So he's endeared himself to his teammates and the coaching staff of the Portland Trailblazers. And they're playing well, by the way. They will make the playoffs in the Western Conference, I believe.
All right, Mike, so you mentioned the Patriots. So any way the Patriots lose this game, I think the big question is how much are they going to be down by at halftime, right? I mean, isn't it that?
Well, you know, it's interesting. And I went to the Celtics-New York Knicks game last night, and Marcus Morris, who's been a great addition to the team, he got injured during the game on a dunk, and he really badly bruised his hip. And he spoke to the media afterward. He walked very gingerly to the interview area in the dressing room. And he was wearing an Alshon Jeffrey Philadelphia Eagles jersey. And he's wearing a Philly hat. And we're thinking, what is he doing here in Patriots land wearing the Eagles colors? But, you know, he's a Philadelphia guy. That's where he grew up. That's where his friends are. So he's just kind of following his natural instinct. But it was kind of odd to see him wearing Philly gear. But the way I look at this game, right, you know, there's no comparison, obviously, between Nick Foles at quarterback and Tom Brady at quarterback. However, the Eagles have had a great all-around season. I think the Patriots win this game. You know, when I look at the Eagles, outstanding team. I respect them a lot. But 2 weeks ago, they needed 5 field goals. 3 weeks ago when they beat the Atlanta Falcons in the playoffs, they didn't score a touchdown. They had 5 field goals. They won 15-12. They turn around the following week in the NFC Championship game. They went 38-7. They looked like the best offensive show in the NFL. But I think Minnesota contributed to that with 2 or 3 turnovers. So I think they're not as great as they showed against Minnesota, and maybe they're a little bit better than the 5 field goal team. So I think they're going to be a very difficult opponent. And I see it being something like 24-17. But I like the Patriots winning it 24-17.
Yeah, I hear you. And the Patriots, you talk about a Brady comeback in the game, their last game in the AFC Championship game, but that defense began to come together in the second half, and if it weren't for that, they would have been down two more touchdowns, and that would not have happened two weeks ago.
Well, I'll tell you, it wouldn't have happened the first 4 weeks of the season when the Patriots defense looked like the worst in the history of the NFL. I mean, everybody was talking about them because they were giving up an average of 33, 34 points a game, and they were giving up anywhere from 400 to 500 yards per game, but it shows you that the coaching staff in New England, it really is the best in the NFL. They have fixed a lot of problems, and they've become not a great defense, but a formidable enough to prevent a lot of scoring. Obviously, they either got the lowest scoring against defense in the NFL or close to it. So that's how they win games. And, of course, on the other edge side of the ball, you have Brady. And, of course, a big factor will Rob Gronkowski be declared eligible to play after the concussion. If he's declared eligible to play, then Philadelphia has the game plan for him. It opens things up for other receivers that Brady has at his disposal.
All right. Mike, but quickly back to high school basketball just for a moment. Over to the girls, however, though. And one of the other teams I know that over the years you've followed kind of closely is the Masco girls with Coach Bob Romeo, who's really, well, he's a legend there. And they actually, I saw a tweet, I think, in the last week or so where they've qualified for the state tournament now, like some incredible number of consecutive years. It's like in the 30s, I think it was.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they had good coaches before Bob came along, but certainly he's certainly stabilized and solidified the program. He has a good, and this year he has a very young team, no size whatsoever, but they're like 12-1, and I couldn't understand why they aren't ranked in the Boston Globe's top 20 or top 15, because they are 12-1. Their only loss has been to Pentucket, which, as you know, Bill, is a traditional power. They're good every year. But in that Pentucket game, Masco was missing its best player, sophomore guard Michaela Graves, who was averaging like 13, 14 points a game. So I don't know if they get to play them again, but they've blown out most of their opponents. I know the league may not be strong, but Bob Romeo, I know, is getting to play some freshmen, some sophomores. He has this very young freshman, Morgan Bovardi, who is the daughter of Larry McIntyre's daughter, okay, Leslie McIntyre, who was a terrific player at Salem High. And Morgan's going to be a terrific high school player. Freshman guard, plays along Michaela Graves. But Graves is the key to that team. She weighs no more than 75 pounds, I don't think. You know. But she can get you 20 points. She can get you 7 or 8 assists. And she causes defensive, defensively, she's all over the place. And they have a scrappy, scrappy team that swarms, like, on defense. And though I see them winning a lot of games, they're going to be a high seed in the tournament. I think they play in Division One because they're a bigger school now. Yeah. Because of enrollment, they're in Division One. But I can see them finishing like 17-3 or 18-2, somewhere along those lines. So, yeah, Bob Romeo orchestrates that program, does a great job, and they love playing for him. They play with a lot of enthusiasm. There's no phenomenal stars on that team, but they get 7 or 8 kids to contribute.
Well, you mentioned Pentucket. I'm glad you did, because we put their scores up on our website and so on. But when you talk about girls basketball in the North Shore over an extended period of time,
yes,
John McNamara of Pentucket girls basketball is just, he's calm. He's just a pleasant, seems like a wonderful guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And yet he wins and wins and has some great players. And nice, I remember when my daughter was playing against those teams, I mean, those were just some really nice teams.
Yeah, I tell you what, I remember when Swampscott had its great basketball teams and they won a state championship under Coach Jack Hughes in 2009. I covered that team very closely. And they could never get over that obstacle of Pentucket. They would play them in a Haverhill preseason tournament or Christmas tournament, and they couldn't beat them. They couldn't beat them. And finally, Swampscott had a great team in 2008, 2009, and they played Pentucket. I'll never forget it. I covered the game in the North Final at Emmanuel College in Boston. And I tell you what, that was the one day where Swampscott brought all their powers to the forefront, and they were able to overcome Pentucket in that game. And McNamara was very gracious in defeat. And, of course, then Swampscott went on to play at the Boston Garden. They won there. And then they absolutely blew out Quaybog Regional at the DCU Center in Worcester to win the state championship, the only state championship the girls have ever won at Swampscott High. And that was a great Swampscott team under Jack Hughes. But Pentucket was their nemesis.
Yeah.
And Pentucket was a team they knew they would have to beat in the North Sectional to go on to try to finish that dream of winning a state championship. And they beat Pentucket that day.
Yeah. Well, we're talking with Mike Renier. And, Mike, one of the things I'm doing here, this is the this month, is the 40th anniversary of the Blizzard of 78. And so I know you go back far enough to remember this.
I sure do.
Now, not everybody we talk to can go back that far, but but I know you can. So tell me about what Mike Grenier was doing during the blizzard of 78. I think sports-wise, of course, the Bean Pot was the big story on that Monday night where the folks got stranded at the Garden. Yeah. That's kind of the sports angle of the Bean Pot on that night. But where were you during the blizzard of 78?
Well, I was working at the Salem News, but I couldn't get to the Salem News because literally, you know, we were in the midst of that. I remember we live in a single family.
And back then, you couldn't work from home.
No,
you know what I mean? Times are different now.
That's right. And as a matter of fact, I think trying to come down Route 114 towards Salem, Massachusetts, the roads you were actually blocked. You could not, by law, go on those roads because they were taking so much time to having to clean off the snow. And I guess people who weren't there or who weren't born at that point can't imagine, Bill, how much snow we had. We had something like somewhere between 40 and 60 inches in my neighborhood. And I remember we literally could not see at the height of the blizzard, and it was a true blizzard, we could not see my neighbor's house across the street for a period of several hours. But, you know, the amazing thing that I remember is that we never lost power. I don't know if the power companies did a better job back in 1978 than they do now, because it seems like we get 2 or 3 inches of snow or a little bit of ice, we lose power for a few hours. But for a course of 3 or 4 days or however long it took, we never lost power. And the other vivid memory that I have is that once the sun came out, and of course the snow had not been removed yet because it took a few days to catch up to the snow, my wife and I actually climbed a huge snow pile to get onto Route 495 because Route 495 was actually closed to traffic. And we stood in the middle of Route 495, a major highway, and it was as quiet as being in the woods or at Walden Pond, you know? And it was a surreal scene to be on. I wish I could have taken selfies then or taken pictures, because hey, it was like being on the middle of Route 93 or Route, but Route 495 was completely devoid of cars, devoid of traffic. It was a sunny day, and we stayed out there for 15 minutes just thinking, this really is a historic event. And it's more snow than I've ever seen, had ever seen at that point in my life. I was 28, 29 years old, and I haven't seen as much snow in one storm in the ensuing 40 years.
So at least you didn't get stuck in doing something like, imagine, like some of those people must have some real horror stories. Those people that, you know, their cars are stuck on the exits 3 miles from their house.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
Yeah. Yeah, of course, we've all seen images. If people have watched recent newscasts of thousands of cars were stranded on Route 128.
Yeah.
Thousands of cars, because in those days, the weather forecasting wasn't as accurate as it is now.
Yeah.
So people actually got into their cars to go to work or to go to various destinations. And once a few cars got stuck because of all the snow, then it meant that several hundred cars, and several hundred cars became several thousand cars. And I just have those images of cars just being stranded for days, and people and emergency vehicles pulling people out of their cars and taking them to emergency shelters. It was an unreal storm, and there was a lot of togetherness. Now, people really helped each other. I know that sounds cliche-ish, but it really was the case. I know in my case, even though we were safe and warm in our home, my brother-in-law came over on snowshoes and skis. He came with a couple of friends from the Lawrence Boys Club, and they helped us shovel out. I mean, they spent several hours just trying to get to open the door. I mean, it was that the drifts of snow were unimaginable. They reached almost the height of our roof of our single-family home.
Yeah.
That's how high the drifts were. You could literally say get on the roof of the house and just jump into the snow without any fear of getting hurt.
You know, Michael, you mentioned the weatherman, and I'll close on this point. I mean, the weather today is just so incredibly accurate. I mean, I know people dump on it and stuff, and they're critical of it because I think that's been a standing joke for 100 years maybe. But, I mean, back when the blizzard of 78 was around and Don Kent was there, it was probably more like a horoscope than it was science. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you would get scientific data, but they didn't have computers and so on. And now I'm just amazed that they can predict these storms almost to the minute, to the hour, let's say. They don't even form.
Yeah.
And here they are. We already know what's going to be happening, you know, for 3 or 4 days out pretty accurately.
Yeah.
You know, to me, it is incredible. But you are right about that piece that back then, people, you know, like no one would have gone to the Garden that night to go to the Bean Pot if they knew what was going to happen. People, you just didn't know this stuff.
No, you didn't know this stuff. And I think obviously it helps now with calling school off and school system. Kids are safer, actually, these days.
Yeah.
If you know ahead of time, you're going to get a 9-inch snowstorm the next day. I know I have a 4-year-old grandson, for example. He goes to preschool. And I know that if the weather's going to be bad, they call off school even the night before.
Yeah.
In those days, back in 78, and of course, obviously, that bean pot, that bean pot night where people had to stay at the Boston Garden, that's just an incredible story. Obviously, I think the Boston Garden did a great job of, they didn't want people to have their lives threatened by going back out on the road, so they let people stay there. And I think they stayed there one or two nights until they could maybe negotiate or navigate their way back to whatever homes they had.
Yeah, a lot of hot dogs, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I hope so anyways.
Yeah. But I still, you know, I saw a film recently of people sleeping in the chairs and in the seats at the Boston Garden and on the floor. And I'm sure.
And there was never a good chair at the Boston Garden.
Right. And I'm sure a few of them, too, had some adult beverages that, you know, yeah, kept them or helped them to fall asleep and not be scared of the snow. You know what I mean?
Okay. All right, Mike, anything else you want to share with us here, you know, things that you're keeping busy with?
No, I just want to wish everyone a great 2018. And if you can get out there and see the state tournament games or the final regular season games that are coming up, whether it's hockey or wrestling. And I'll tell you what, speaking of wrestling, I know when being at St. John's Prep over the weekend, someone told me they're going to be hosting the state wrestling championships, yeah, because they have such a great facility now. And so, you know, whether it be basketball or girls basketball or hockey or girls hockey, hope you guys can get out there and see some games late season and certainly support the kids in state tournament games, the local teams from the North Shore. It's always a great take, and maybe we have a couple of state champions in our midst.
Yeah, well, let's hope so. Well, Mike, always good talking with you. Great seeing you, and glad to hear to see that you're all well.
Yeah, I'm great you made it to Tripoli's in North Andover to have a slice of pizza. This place has been around for 100 years in Lawrence, and Bill Newell gets to taste the pizza at Tripoli's Bakery.
I've made my week. There you go.
Great. It's great that you could come over. Thanks for giving me this opportunity, Bill. I want to say hi to all our friends on the North Shore, people I've known for literally for 40 or 50 years. I hope they're all doing well.
Gotcha. Mike Grenier with us here, and I'm Bill Newell here on MSO News Sports.